Good morning. It's Tuesday, the 27th of October. I'm Kathleen Dunn, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest this hour has written, as Congress debates the reform of the American healthcare system, nurses and the nursing profession must be at the table. Regardless of the healthcare model that we eventually decide on, nurses could and should be key factors in reducing healthcare costs and increasing efficiency while maintaining the quality of patient care and outcomes. Dean Catherine May is our guest. She is dean and professor of the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Nursing, and we're continuing our series of programs on healthcare reform. She served as professor and director of the School of Nursing at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver before coming to Madison, and also as president of the Canadian Association of University Schools of Nursing. She has held faculty and administrative posts at the University of California, San Francisco, and Vanderbilt University, and is an elected fellow of the American Academy of Nursing. We're going to welcome phone calls. I'll be anxious to hear everybody welcome. I'm particularly interested in hearing from those of you who are in the nursing profession about some of the models that we'll be talking about this hour. Our phone number, as always, is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email address, if you'd like to use that, is talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Dean Catherine May, hello. Thank you so much for being with us.
Good morning, Kathleen. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, our pleasure. And you have such an interesting perspective because you've worked in Canada as well.
Indeed. It was a bit of a jolt after having spent nearly 7 years in Canada to return to the United States in 2000 because the healthcare arena had changed so dramatically, and unfortunately not for the better.
Right. You have said, and we hear this all the time, that one of your biggest concern is this worldwide shortage of nurses. Are we addressing that?
Well, I believe that there have been remarkable gains made in increasing capacity of nursing programs around the country, but we are still turning away thousands, literally thousands of well-qualified applicants because we can't increase the capacity quickly enough, partly because we have a huge nursing faculty shortage, which is limiting the input and the throughput, and the recruitment of foreign educated nurses to the United States to remedy our own nursing shortage has slowed down a bit, but we shouldn't fool ourselves. We still are contributing in a substantial way to shortages in countries around the world.
And what's causing the faculty shortage?
Well, in part, it's a function of having not anticipated the shortage in time to expand our graduate enrollments. In part, it's a function of how nurses do advanced degrees. Traditionally, nurses do a degree a decade. They get their bachelor's degree, and then they practice, and then they get their master's degree about 10 years later, and then they practice, and then 10 years later, they think about getting a doctorate, and by then, they're in their late 40s or early 50s, and they have a relatively short working lifespan as a faculty member.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of the faculty are in a very tight age clump. The average age of nursing faculty across the country is 55.
Hmm.
So the shortage is in part because people have already begun to retire out, and we're not replacing them at nearly the rate we need to.
What a mess, huh? You have thousands of people who would like to be nurses. We need nurses. We can't get them right away.
Yes, exactly. And one of the challenges, I think, as the nation looks forward to a reformed healthcare system, I like to say in Canada, because Canada hit the nursing shortage a full decade before the United States did, there is no solution for the shortage that doesn't go through nursing education. And now, I say in the United States, Without substantial investment, reinvestment in nursing education, healthcare reform will be extraordinarily difficult.
Mm-hmm. You talk about how nurses can really help produce significant cost savings, that we need to use nurses more, actually, in whatever kind of healthcare reform we enact.
Indeed. And while nurses are remarkably clever at workarounds, there are still many embedded barriers in our reimbursement systems, in federal regulation, in some cases in state regulation. There are barriers to allowing advanced practice nurses, that is nurse practitioners, clinical nurse specialists, nurse midwives, barriers to allowing those advanced practice nurses to practice at the full extent of their education. So one element of healthcare reform is going to have to be fair rulemaking and elimination of those systemic barriers. Otherwise, we're going to have close to 150 nurse practitioners, for instance, who are unable to practice in some fairly important areas.
Hmm. So where are they being held back? In what areas?
Well, one of the most specific areas has to do with whether nurse practitioners can be reimbursed for certifying a patient is ready for home care, for certifying that a patient is ready for hospice care. Those are activities that are currently under reimbursement regulations restricted to the practice of physicians. And I believe that most people would argue that nurse practitioners are certainly well qualified and educated sufficiently to do those kinds of functions in the healthcare system.
Mm-hmm. I was interested in this article that you wrote in which you talked about this innovative new model for primary and preventive care delivery. Can you tell me more about the nurse-managed health centers in some 40 states?
Yes. Nurse-managed health centers have actually been around for a very long time. Indeed, our sister school, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, has led in the creation of nurse-managed centers. So you should be talking to Dean Lundeen over there because she is, in fact, a national authority on this area. Nurse-managed centers are analogous or a parallel development to community health centers, where schools of nursing or nurses in group practice organized themselves, created primary care centers where individuals who either have no health insurance or who are underinsured or who are eligible for federal forms of health insurance can walk in, can get primary care, and can use that center as not only an access point to physician care when it's necessary, but they can also use those nurse-managed centers as a place to learn about how they can take better care of their own health. Nurse-managed centers not only provide primary care, but they already have a very strong emphasis on health promotion and disease prevention, which we all know has got to be built into the system of the future.
And you're saying that those could be expanded. Is the problem with expansion that we don't have enough nurses?
Well, that's holding us back a bit, but many nurse-managed centers are not eligible to become federally qualified health centers because they are affiliated with a nursing school as opposed to affiliated with a hospital or a medical school. So again, it's one of the embedded barriers that if we could just tweak the reimbursement language a little, nurse-led community health centers could, in fact, be receiving reimbursement at better rates.
Mm-hmm. So is one of the basic problems here, or am I reading too much into this, that we're not giving nurses their due respect?
Well, I think that's a good way to put it, Kathleen. Nurse practitioners are not a new story. I'm older than dirt, and I was prepared
so
as a nurse practitioner in the 70s. We already knew in California in the 70s that nurse practitioners were demonstrating comparable or better health outcomes in selected populations. They were able to do so at a reduced cost to payers when working in effective consultation and cooperation with physicians. We knew this in the 70s. I think we should be talking about a significant effort to tweak federal language, to tweak state language, so that nurse practitioners can actually practice at the full extent of their preparation.
Mm-hmm. Have nurses been included in all the debate about the reform of the American healthcare system?
Absolutely. There have been nurse leaders from virtually every one of the major nursing organizations at the table. One of the things that worries me a little is how much of the conversation actually happens at the table. There are powerful forces engaged in this conversation, and as we all know, the process of lawmaking often happens in corridors as frequently as it happens over board tables. So one of the things that does worry me a little is the extent to which nursing is regarded as a powerful solution and therefore a constituency that must be brought in every significant conversation, or whether nursing organizations have been in the public conversations, but are perhaps not as well represented in the corridor conversations.
Mm-hmm. What did you think of the news that came out yesterday of this public option, which would cover some 10 million people, is my understanding, states could opt out? Was that a welcome sign, do you think, or not?
Well, I think so, but I say I think so, Kathleen, because I've spent Over the last 2 months, I've disciplined myself to spend time every week attempting to understand right. what's going on in healthcare reform, and I feel about as ignorant as I did 3 months ago. It is an enormously complex process. So on the kind of the headline story about a public option is still being discussed, I think that's good news. Every nursing organization in the country has signed on saying a public option is an important step toward a reformed healthcare system. But us saying it and it actually being politically possible, I know, are two different things.
Mm-hmm. And to your point that things may be happening in the corridors, that certainly struck me as being the case when the news was announced yesterday. I was thinking, oh, well, how did this all happen?
Yeah.
Who was meeting
yeah.
with whom?
Yes, exactly right. And I do tend to be a bit of a Pollyanna. So I am hopeful that individuals, citizens around the country who have been saying public option is critical for months. I think this may be the time for us to stand up and maybe yell a little louder.
Considering how important nurses are and how big a role they could play, an expanded role in any kind of reform, why is it that so much more money on education is spent on medical education than on nursing education?
Well, I think part of it is historical, Kathleen. Academic medicine and physicians in general are much more experienced at bringing their message in strong tones to state and federal legislators. I think nursing came to the table a little late. I also think that nurses, almost as a breed, are accustomed to just putting our heads down and getting the work done. And we have failed to prepare enough nurses who are extraordinarily well informed about policy making. We're doing better now, but there were two decades there where we literally didn't send nurse leaders to policy. So I think we're catching up a little bit. And I always hesitate to play the gender card, but I still think it's there.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you the number of times that my incredibly talented nursing students here at Madison are asked, you're so bright, why didn't you go to medical school? Huh. And so if you take that attitude and kind of translate it into what counts for important in Washington and in state capitals, nursing still has got an uphill battle, I think.
We're going to welcome phone calls. Dean Catherine May is our guest, Dean and Professor, University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Nursing. Our phone number, one line is open if you'd like to get it, is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, and email address, talk@WPR.org, talk@WPR.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The second hour of our program today, the author of In the President's Secret Service, Behind the Scenes with Agents in the Line of Fire and the Presidents They Protect. Let's go to phone calls now, starting with Kelly from Columbus. Hello, Kelly.
Hi. I called last week and asked that you have this particular topic on here, so very happy to hear that there's nursing brought up the whole issue around healthcare reform. So I also had a question about, you know, public health nursing. We're not going to have any public health nurses soon, and I think we're one of the huge assets that come to the table as far as healthcare reform. Is there anything being done about trying to beef up public health nursing, trying to, you know, include them in these talks, anything like that?
Kelly, thank you. It's an absolutely monumental question. I think that if you watched the news last night, the coverage of the confusion around the country around access to H1N1 vaccine is a perfect example of what happens when states completely erode their public health nursing infrastructure and then expect the system to work. Public health nurses are on the front line. They are the public health infrastructure in the country. And states trying to balance budgets the situations in many states are just catastrophic. So, yes, the good news is that there is discussion at the national level about trying to create more training grant money for schools of nursing that are preparing nurses for public health practice. There has been a concerted message from all nursing organizations in a document lays out nursing's platform for quality health reform, and it specifically calls out public health nursing as a part of the nursing sector that really needs to be supported and needs to grow. I think that we in education have done a pretty good job of throwing out some of the old, tired reasoning. In my day, you couldn't become a public health nurse until you had had 5 years of hospital nursing practice, and it didn't make sense to me then, and it doesn't make sense to me now. Public health departments are, in fact, eager to hire new-to-practice nurses with the understanding that they will require some seasoning and some guidance in their early years of practice, but we need to do everything we can to show public health nursing as a vital arena for smart, motivated, and slightly driven nurses.
Right. I also work with family care. Has anybody talked at a federal level about instituting family care for part of this healthcare reform?
Well, I see evidence that family care is on the agenda. The Institute for the Institute of Medicine, the IOM, has promulgated a definition of primary care that that basically puts primary care in the context of family. It expressly says that primary care is the provision of healthcare services through a sustained partnership with patients and families. So the good news is that the family word is beginning to appear in important documents. But I don't think we're making much headway here. Of course, the real issue is that our focus on the federal level right now in healthcare reform, the legislators are all talking about insurance reform. That's basically what's happening now. We haven't even gotten to the hard conversations about reforming reimbursement and reforming delivery care models. That will come later.
Thank you, Kelly. Liz from Eau Claire. Hi, Liz.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi. Well, I'm a dietitian, diabetes educator, have been for a number of years, and I'd just like to add my comments about my work with nurse practitioners has been a pure joy because they are good at teamwork. They have the ability to look at the big picture, the whole family, the community, the context of the illness. And this is especially important for chronic illness care, which is about three-fourths of the cost of our current health care condition. And they also work better with people like me who make referrals appropriately for not just dietitians, but health educators, physical therapists, and home health care, whatever it is. They really have a knack of doing this. And I think it's the focus of their training that lets them have this big picture. And what's held us back in terms of delivery models has been the reimbursement process as it's now structured. So I think that they could help us save money by letting all of the others of us into the arena to help patients get the care they need at a cheaper and better care.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my comment, I guess. I would like to hear your guest response.
Sure. Thank you, Liz.
Oh, my goodness, Liz. We should have you on payroll. Well, I'm glad to hear that you feel that way. I'm convinced that you speak the truth. And it's not that nurses are fundamentally better people. It has nothing to do with that. But it is a fundamental difference in how advanced practice nurses are educated. I like to explain to people that when you have a nurse practitioner, you are benefiting from two specific domains of practice. The first, and what's most obvious to people, is the delegated medical function domain. So the nurses diagnose and treat. They prescribe those functions that we have historically thought of as medical practice, but you also get a nurse. And nurses are accustomed to working in teams. They're accustomed to figuring out, all right, who really should lead this process because they have the best understanding of the patient's situation. I believe that one of the examples of where not only nurses but dietitians have been kind of cut out of the mix, the Medicare medical home pilot project, which is intended to look at a coordinated effort to manage individuals and families who are dealing with complex chronic conditions in a different way. The medical home, a pilot project, requires that medical homes be led by board-certified physicians. Well, I think most people who are in the front lines of primary care would argue that there are some individuals and families for whom a nurse practitioner or perhaps even a dietitian working in a team might be better qualified to lead that person's or that family's care process. So I'm grateful that Minnesota has written into their state language the healthcare home, because I think that opens the doors and windows a little more. Hmm. And it will be interesting to see if that language is reformed at the federal level.
So that has to be written into state reform.
Indeed.
Okay. Thanks for the call. Chris from Oshkosh. We'll get her before she has a class, I guess, at 9:40. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Yes, I'm a nursing student and not a medical student, because as a non-traditional, going back for my second career, I wanted to work with people. And, of course, medicine is the science of the disease process, and nursing is the science of people's response to things. And I agree with the guest on the insurance reform and the reimbursement reform, but my concern is that having worked in the private and public sector, that the public option will degrade care overall, because in my experience, private care is much higher quality than public care, regardless of the patient, regardless of where the patients come from. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to talk about that.
Well, thanks, Chris, for your comment. I suspect that this is a point on which you and I will have to agree to disagree. I do not believe that a publicly financed and publicly administered health insurance program actually will affect the quality of care. I think that the providers in the system are going to have to take responsibility for ensuring the quality of care is at a level across the system. And having spent nearly 7 years in Canada, I can tell you that the quality of care in the Canadian system is as good or better than care most Americans enjoy, despite the propaganda that some people would have you believe about the problems in the Canadian system. Mm. However, I think that it's going to be a delicate dance, and we're going to have to do it carefully if the public option survives. It probably should be a public option similar to the insurance system in which federal employees are currently covered, which means they have a range of options, they have considerable choice, and it doesn't balkanize public care.
You talked earlier about Canada facing a nursing shortage some 10 years prior to the United States. Have they tackled that problem?
They have, and they've essentially won the battle.
Really?
It was quite interesting, because I left just as Canada was really getting their feet under them. That was a really rocky analogy there. I left Canada just as major provincial and federal reinvestment was happening in terms of nursing education. Canada has increased the production of baccalaureate-educated nurses nationwide by more than 17% in the last 5 years, which is just a remarkable change. And they did it by saying nursing education is a critical public good, and we're going to invest in it, and we're going to eliminate the barriers to access, and we're going to educate Canadian nurses for Canada. And so I'm hopeful that we will see something like that kind of reinvestment here in the States.
That's quite remarkable.
It is quite remarkable, especially since when I arrived in Canada in 1994, the United States was recruiting 3 of every 10 newly graduated Canadian nurses.
Whew.
So so Canada managed to turn the corner and did it in I think, record time. But once again, since healthcare is a federal responsibility and a provincial mandate, all the public officials, it didn't take too long for the public officials to realize that this was a direction that they needed to go, that there was no way through the shortage without a reinvestment in nursing education. It's taking a good deal longer for that message to become clear in the United States.
Thanks, Chris. Let's go to Bill from Oshkosh. Hi, Bill.
Hi. Good morning. Fascinating show, but there seems to be, I'm a little confused about how to get nurses through the system. I worked in a country, developing country, and was on the arts faculty. I was the arts faculty representative to the medical school, a very rural place, 10% urban, rest rural. And it was amazing how much the most basic care by doctor boys out in the bush, so-called, could affect a population's health. And having a local hospital, for an entire, almost half a state here would be able to, function for critical cases and extend the expected lifespan. And I'm wondering whether the push for that professionalization itself in nursing, which has been, I think, documented well, hasn't itself, by pushing people into higher and higher specializations, or pulling them, as it were, has affected the number of nurses that are operating on a more general level. In other words, access to nursing school. The resources have gone to increasing professionalization and specialization when basic nursing itself is, there's a huge shortage in. And I was wondering if that's a misconception or whether, and there are other factors that have resulted in a problems of finding nurses for rural areas or basic nursing for rural areas. And I know Canada, I work on another foundation there in Canada, has people that it sends up to the provinces for a couple of years, and then usually when they get married to some local guy, they head back to the cities. But anyway, I'll take my answer.
Okay. Thanks, Bill.
The complex question, Bill. I think I'll restate to try to chew off a bit. I think many people do believe that as nursing has moved from hospital-based training or that level of training to university education, many people have argued that constricts access, that there are many people who would wish for careers in nursing who simply don't have the wherewithal for university education. But I think Canada is a good example of how that has been proven not to be so. Canada actually now requires in every province but Quebec, and I think there might be some slippage in Alberta, but every other province in Canada requires registered nurses to be educated at the baccalaureate level. But what they've done is they then have ensured that there are access points in all various permutations of higher education to enable people, even in rural communities, to access a university education in nursing. So the issue is not the level of education, it's how you design it. I do not believe that it makes sense to continue to talk about nursing as a profession to which one can be educated by 2 years post high school. There's simply too much science to be understood, and actually rural practice is even more complex than practice in urban centers in some cases. So I think the real issue is we need to increase access across the educational system and to make sure that folks can get university education in nursing if they desire it, not presuming that there is some level below professional nursing practice that can meet the needs of people in rural and remote areas. That's I think that's a model. I think that's like the 1950 Chevy. It was a good model for 1950, but I don't think it's going to work for us now.
I'd like for you to talk a little bit more, if you would please, Dean May, about nurse practitioners. I know that you have written that they can prescribe medications. The care they provide is of equal quality and patient outcomes to that of primary care doctors. How many do we have? What kind of training do they go through? And is there a possibility that we'll have more of them and they can replace primary care doctors? And we need more primary care doctors, I think, too.
Indeed. Let me start at the end of your comment, Kathleen. I think in most cases, nurse practitioners and primary care physicians need to be thought of as teammates.
Mm-hmm.
We will absolutely need primary care physicians to manage patients whose conditions require management by a physician. And nurse practitioners are educated, in fact, to understand when co-management or when referral to a physician is absolutely essential. But having said that, I think that as the maldistribution of physicians, not only geographically, but also the maldistribution, meaning not as many going into primary care and former going into specialty practice, as that situation continues to unfold, I think that we need to look at whether or not nurse practitioners can be the access point to the health, to a reformed healthcare system. Nurse practitioners are registered nurses who hold a master's degree. Meaning they have a baccalaureate degree in nursing, and then the master's degree is currently the route for specialization, and they are educated in specialty areas, family care, women's health, pediatrics, geriatrics, psychiatric, mental health, but they are also educated in what I referred to before, the domain of delegated medical function. So they diagnose and treat stable chronic and minor acute conditions. So there are about 130,000 nurse practitioners across the United States practicing right now. It's the fastest growing group of primary care providers in the United States and also in Canada. I think that we need to look at how we can expand access to those programs, not necessarily to look at replacing primary care physicians, but replacing primary care physicians as an access point.
Right. 130,000 seems low to me.
Oh, I think it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's go to Andrew from Green Bay. Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
All right, how are you?
I'm doing all right.
Good.
I had a question for the speaker. I was inquiring on mostly focusing on the BSN levels or just the RN level of nursing, primarily focusing in emergency medicine, ICUs, and urgent care. I'm inquiring what your opinions and thoughts are utilizing paramedics more in this role, not as a accessory to the nursing, but actually filling more of a nursing role in these settings of emergency care due to the fact that most paramedics, in comparison to a lot of RNs, have a higher functioning level in that acute atmosphere. I was inquiring on your opinions on that matter.
Ooh, Andrew, I'm not sure that I would agree that comparing paramedics to nurses practicing in emergency rooms, I'm not certain that I would agree that paramedics have more comprehensive training. They certainly have more focused training, and there may be circumstances where use of paramedics to expand the capacity of emergency room departments might make sense. But again, nursing education is in fact comprehensive, and nurses specialize. They specialize through the concentrated practice in a domain. So the fact that a nurse holds an associate degree or a bachelor's degree and is practicing, but has been practicing in emergency room nursing for a decade, likelihood is that they've already certified as specialists in that field. So I think the comparison is not necessarily, is it better? I think the preparation is different. And I think sometimes when you're short on personnel, you want the most comprehensively prepared person to be at every place where people touch the system. So I'm not sure that I would agree, but I think it's an interesting point to talk about.
Thank you, Andrew. Don from Shawano. Hi.
Good morning.
Hi.
Actually, before my question, just a quick comment. I've been hearing a lot about primary care NPs and how they are as good as or better locally. My experience hasn't been such, it can happen with the doctor. But then on the other hand, my NP for my cardiologist is just really wonderful. So if they're listening at the office, Carrie, thank you very much. You're a dedicated professional. But my question goes back, at the beginning of the show, you were talking about that there is such a shortage of nurses. And my wife is an RN in northeast Wisconsin, not in Shawano, in one of the larger hospitals in Green Bay. And the experience in Green Bay is nobody's hiring. They're graduating students from Oshkosh, from Green Bay, from NWTC, where they have a wonderful program. And they're not getting hired because the hospitals are just not replacing staff that are moving on or retiring. And the nurses who are there, my wife does pulse surgical, and they are just swamped with work. They're frustrated. They're tired. They hurt. yeah, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I just don't see this shortage. There may be a shortage, but part of it is just because the hospitals aren't hiring these nurses who are coming out of school.
Yes, Don, you're absolutely right. There has been a temporary blip. I do believe it is temporary. The economic downturn has powerfully affected how hospitals are managing resources. And many hospitals, many integrated healthcare systems have ratcheted back their hiring of registered nurses over the last year, not because they don't need them, but because they were concerned that their bottom line was looking a little soft. Elective surgeries went down in many places, therefore beds are not full, therefore hospitals did not have to staff to a full census. I think as the economy begins to turn around, you will see hospitals beginning to staff back up. I think that we are already seeing the consequences of people deferring necessary health care because they're coming into the emergency rooms, deferring elective procedures, and then we have an emergency on our hands. So I've been telling our students here in Madison this is a blip. As soon as the economy recovers, three things will happen. First, the nurses who went back to work full-time because they were concerned about their economic security will go back to part-time practice. Second, hospitals will start hiring. And third, healthcare reform is going to drive the creation of new kinds of positions in order to manage people more effectively across settings. And so I think that there is a nursing shortage, and it's going to get worse. Mm-hmm. As nurses retire out and as faculty retire out, there's a perfect storm out ahead of us. So we have to keep the focus on not only sustaining but increasing our output in nursing education.
Mm-hmm. Along similar lines, Matt from Milwaukee sends an email. Because of difficult financial circumstances, my 49-year-old wife is seeking to return to nursing after a 14-year hiatus from geriatric nursing. She's having a difficult time finding work, even temporary jobs giving flu shots. There aren't any flu shots. That's part of the problem. Are hard to come by. Thanks, Matt in Milwaukee.
Yes, yes. Matt, I believe that this is going to resolve. When? Hard to say. But I think that I expect that we will start seeing hospitals beginning to post increasing numbers of openings in the next two fiscal quarters. I would be very surprised if that doesn't happen.
Joining us this hour as we continue our series, and we've had many programs now on healthcare reform, we look at nursing this hour of the program, and our guest is Dean Catherine May, Dean and Professor of the School of Nursing at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Our phone number, we have one line open. It's been busy, 1-800-486-8655. And the email address is talk@wpr.org. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Next hour, the author of In the President's Secret Service, Behind the Scenes with Agents in the Line of Fire and the Presidents They Protect. Back to phone calls. Joel is next from Suamico. Hi, Joel.
Hi, and thank you for taking my call. You know, parenthetically, I am an anesthesiologist in Green Bay, and I have to agree with Don that currently we have a lot of problems with them running the grid on nurses as far as telling them that they have to take a day off or things like that. And it is a problem, at least hospital-based nurses. There seems to be an oversupply at the present time. I agree that's probably due to the economy, and hopefully that will resolve shortly. My other point is, well, I have two other points. We anesthesiologists have kind of been in the forefront of utilizing certified registered nurse anesthetists to extend our range and allow us to do more cases and care for more patients. And they are technically, at least at our hospital, considered nurse practitioners and have prescribing rights, for example, at codes and things like that. So we're a little bit ahead of the curve on that. And my final comment was I have to disagree with your guest as far as what the public option might do to the quality of health care. It all depends on how it is financed. And currently, HR 3200, they're not quite sure what they're going to do with that as far as whether they're going to base it on what reimbursement on what private insurance pays, or whether they base it on Medicare reimbursement. And you know, there are many physicians who choose not to take care of Medicare patients simply because of the low reimbursement rates. And I suspect the problem's only going to get worse if they choose to fund H.R. 3200 and reimburse based on Medicare reimbursement rates. And I will hang up and listen to your response. Thank you.
Thank you, Joel, for your comments. You are absolutely right. Anesthesiology is a domain of practice where the physician, nurse, advanced nurse practitioner collaboration has worked well for decades. It actually is a model, and I think it's a good point that you raise. I'm pleased to hear that I'm pleased to hear that you have commented on it isn't public care per se, but it's how public care is financed. That's absolutely right. The fact that the three House bills, which would need to be merged into a single bill, all include in some way, shape, or form a public option for health insurance is encouraging. But, yeah, we've got to do it right. And discounting care by continuing the Medicare reimbursement at rates below cost isn't going to make any sense. Now, I do have to say that those of us in healthcare are going to have to step up here. We have done an abysmal job job of ensuring that quality is uniform and that we are driving costs down. We just haven't gotten serious about this work, even though many of us have been working hard at it for a lot of years. We are going to have to step up, otherwise healthcare reform is doomed. We have to drive costs down. We have to maintain quality, and that needs to be done as soon as we get the financing conversations over.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Joel. Susie from Price County. Hi.
Hi, this is Susie from Price County. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure, Susie.
I have been a public health nurse for 23 years, and I've come a long way, I think, as nurses. I have come from a generation of nurses, and my mother, being a nurse, remembers when the nurses at the nursing station would stand up to attention when the doctors would enter the floor.
Oh, my.
I wouldn't. Now practicing, I practice in public health, like I said, and I think we've come a long way, and I very much feel like part of the healthcare team, working together with the physicians, the nurse practitioners, the dietitians, the schools, to accomplish one goal, and that goal is for the care of the patient, the health of the patient, the health of the family, and the health of the community. So I want to applaud nursing in that. However, I have a very good friend who is a nursing instructor, and by the way, she's in her early 30s, so she's breaking that curve. And we just had a discussion this weekend about how we need to support our young. We as nurses, and I believe this was in Nursing Matters some time ago, about we as nurses need to grasp our young and support them out in the field. I myself as a nurse have, you know, had students mentoring me, and I, at the end of the day, with a student mentoring me, I'm exhausted. But I have to step back and, again, think about what I am doing for my profession and encourage all the other nurses out there when they are doing the mentoring programs, when they are having hospital or nurses on floors with them, to step back and not eat their young, but give them much support and realize that, you know, they are our future in nursing, and hopefully we can all come together as one. Thank you, and I'll take my comments.
Thanks, Susie.
Any comments off the air.
Okay.
Susie, thank you, and good for you. 23 years in public health nursing. You're one of the really valuable ones. And I do agree. I think nursing has had a dark past in some ways of not seeing that the guidance and the mentoring of new to practice nurses is a fundamental professional responsibility. I think we've got new models on the go nationwide now, like preceptoring models, where nurses in practice are much more directly involved in the education of new nurses. The problem is that you aren't reimbursed for that. Very often you're not given much credit other than an attagirl at the end of the day. That's a bit of a problem. I think that nurses often tend tend to give much good work away. So I would be happier in a system where I, as a dean, would be able to offer some benefit, some tangible benefit to a public health nursing division where we are placing our students. That model is, I think, a model that we're going to have to work on in the next decade.
We go next to Mark from Eau Claire. Hi, Mark.
Hi. I'm a mental health professional, when I was in grad school, I was concentrating in health psychology. And the thing that my professors and my fellow students and I talked about was like an integrated healthcare system where you include not just nurse practitioners, primary care doctors, mental health professionals, nurses, but also chiropractors, nutritionists, herbalists, massage therapists, all within reach of each other so we can utilize all the healthcare providers in a more efficient way, and then spend less, I guess not waste, but utilize less time of the primary doctor for minute cases and bring them in on the greater professionals that we need like that into the cases that we really need them on, the acute, the chronic, critical cases and things like that. But that's what I see, and I hope to someday become a mental health professional that can also do, nutrition counseling and things like that. But that's my comment.
Okay.
And, I'd like a response.
Sure.
Well, Mark, you are characterizing a comprehensive health promotion, disease prevention, consumer-facing model, which is exactly where we need to be going. Now, there are a couple of caveats there. I think we need to pay attention to evidence around effectiveness in terms of providing covered services. We need to pay attention to efficiency so that if there are too many cooks in the kitchen, the stew tends to get a little complicated. So I think teams need to be small enough so that they actually can work well with patients and families. But the kind of care that you're describing is the kind of care that is available in the Canadian healthcare system. When I lived there, I became a patient in the system, and I had access to a fairly wide array of what would be called in the United States complementary therapies, because the provincial health insurance system deemed that there was sufficient evidence of efficacy that they would cover certain services. And so I think that that's a future, I think, out ahead of us here in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Tell me how you went into the whole profession. What motivated you?
Oh, well, it's interesting. Asking nurses how they became nurses is probably a whole anthropologic study in and of itself, Kathleen. I went into nursing almost as a default. I wasn't called to nursing, but I wasn't exactly sure what I wanted to do, and I was relatively certain that medicine wasn't what I wanted. And my mother strongly encouraged me. She had wanted to be a nurse herself. She was a very, very smart woman, and she strongly encouraged me to go to nursing school. And for once, I paid attention to my mother, and she was absolutely right.
You listen to your mom.
I
love that
to my
answer.
Mom.
Okay. Rachel from Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I've been a nurse for 30 years, and I floated in 5 different Milwaukee hospitals. And can I just share with you some of the things that I've seen?
You can share a couple. Yeah, we're running short on time.
Okay. First of all, what I've observed is that the insurance companies are the ones that run the hospitals. I've had several patients that I was told I had to discharge and they were unsafe to go home. And I literally had to put my job on the line to refuse to send them home. I saw a well-respected hospital. They lost their director of an AODA unit. He left, and they just assigned a regular doctor to the unit. And there were very unsafe practices done there, and I complained about it, and nothing was done. I also saw aides running the floors on night shift with no RNs present. I have to tell you that some of the best nurses I worked next to were county grads who did not have a BSN. And I can also tell you that a manager is the one that establishes the quality of a unit.
Dean May.
Rachel, well, you've identified some really worrisome signs. I agree with you. I think that insurance reform is critical because right now insurance companies can, in fact, determine how care should be delivered, and physicians and nurses are relatively powerless to make a change there. I think that the notion of registered units running on nights without a registered nurse in place, I think you're seeing hospitals cutting back on staffing because they're concerned about their bottom line. And, no money, no mission. I get that hospitals have to run as economic enterprises. So, and your comment about some of the best nurses you practiced with were nurses who had diploma or associate degrees. My philosophy is that the education doesn't make the nurse, but because there are fabulous nurses practicing everywhere in the system with preparations that are different. But I think we do have to pay attention to the fact that there is so much more now involved in healthcare than there was even 15 years ago, that it's very difficult to imagine an educational model that doesn't ensure that the nurse has got a really strong footing to understand where science and technology is going to drive nursing practice. So, Rachel, I would encourage you to be strong, take care of yourself. I think that better days are ahead.
Dean May, thank you. You've been a great guest. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Thank you. Dean Catherine May, Dean and Professor at the School of Nursing, University of Wisconsin-Madison, continuing in our series of healthcare reform programs. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, to John Treader for on-air production, and thanks for all of your calls. We'll return following the news.